Why don't we read a lovely wee review?
Oh, yes.
This one is from Astro Girl Grace. It's a 5-star review, and the subject line is OMG.
Oh, OMG.
Oh. OMG.
Ooh.
Right. Let's
that
see
could
what
be, that could be good or bad.
It could be good or bad.
Oh, my God. This is a terrible podcast.
I feel like the 5 stars kind of point to it. Probably. I've got an idea of where it's going to go. Okay. So it starts off with, I'm in love with these guys. I may be a younger viewer, but it has completely expanded my outlook on science.
Oh, that's so nice.
These boys make me laugh so hard, and I had to stop myself from bursting into laughter in the middle of the night. I love the great subjects and the way they deliver the facts. Thank you so much for this amazing podcast. Big fan.
Bringing you the facts.
Probably my favorite review ever. Thank you very much.
It's lovely. Thank you, Astro Girl Grace. If you would like to have your review read out at the start of the podcast, head over to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review, and say something nice. Only if you say something nice. We don't take mean reviews, just nice ones.
Do we not take reviews from Spotify?
Spotify don't do reviews.
They don't do reviews?
What the flip?
I know.
Okay, let's start this show. Hello and welcome to The Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jap and Luke Cutford.
Hey!
Howdy!
Hi.
This week, we're talking about shallow morality and deep fakes.
Ooh.
Shallow morality. And deep fake. Interesting. There's some YouTubers who I could describe like that.
Did you mean all of them?
We have started off this episode with drama already. Somebody call Keemstar.
Because Keemstar.
Oh, let's get right into the science.
YouTuber Luke Cupforth has called out everyone.
Have you guys? I've never seen it. Is that a reference to Keemstar? I've never seen a single
Keemstar
video.
I've never seen a Keemstar video. Right into the news.
I've just seen people reference Keemstar.
We've entered a time in human history where video evidence may no longer be evidence at all. Photoshop has been around for years, but what happens when you can effectively Photoshop essentially anyone's face onto anyone else's?
Oh, I've seen this.
This is deepfake. Yeah, have you guys heard of deepfakes before?
I have.
Yes.
I have.
It's like this new technology where you can put anybody's face on any video. Like you can put someone else's face onto somebody else's face and change their voice as well some other way. So you can essentially create a fake video of somebody doing something they haven't actually done.
Unfortunately, like every new modern technology, it was first exploited by the pornography industry.
It wasn't first exploited by the...
Is that people, like every like large thing that can be applied to porn, it was applied to porn.
Well, yeah,
I think
porn
that's
is a driver
started
for,
calling it out.
Porn is a driver for industry, though, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah.
Take this with a grain of salt, but I'm fairly sure that the reason that VHS won over Betamax...
Because porn used it, yeah.
Yeah, because porn used it.
Yeah.
Okay, so whenever there was Laserdisc and there was DVD, there was Betamax and there was VHS. All of these kind of format wars, porn wins out. Whichever one porn chooses is the one that wins.
Probably not anymore.
Is the porn industry that
big?
Well,
if you think about it, yes, massive.
Really?
But massive. Bigger than you think. But yes, actually, I would say that it does now because...
Sounds like a title of some porn, Corey.
Because...
yes, bigger than you think.
Yes,
you say that the format
bigger
wars...
than you think.
You say that the format wars aren't decided by porn anymore, but would you tend to read porn in a magazine now, or would you get it online via streaming?
Well... I choose not to look at pornography.
I'm not saying that any of us do. That's not my point. My point is that generally people will veer towards streaming.
Right.
That
so they would help the internet become popular.
Yeah.
Right.
So
fair enough. Like a video. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like smut.
Not
like 50 Shades of Grey filth.
What? No. Oh, no, goodness. No. No, I mean smut.
Smut.
Filth.
No, I mean, ugly word.
I mean, in terms of the format wars, porn is, I mean, maybe porn isn't the driver, but porn is certainly an indicator. Whichever one it chooses is usually the winning horse.
I bet there's some crazy stat about the percentage of websites that are actually porn.
Oh, it's, I mean,
probably scarily high.
I would say 10% minimum.
That's too much.
Take your, place your bets. James, what do you bet?
10%.
I'm going to go outlandish. I'm going to say 35%.
Oof. Okay. Well, are we talking about storage or internet traffic per day?
Oh,
how much
internet traffic per day is going to be way higher than 10%. Storage, I would say, I would comfortably sit about my 10.
Are we doing storage?
No, internet traffic per day.
I'm going to stick at 35.
Traffic, then. Oh, I want to say 35-ish. I'll go with 40.
It is 35.
Oh, oh, that's not bad.
35% of yes. all internet downloads are related to pornography.
I feel like I need to clarify. Webroot.com.
No, Jam just knows everything there is to know about porn. He's
an encyclopedic knowledge of porn.
So what are deepfakes, guys?
Well,
fake videos of people.
Yeah.
That of where they've superimposed usually a celebrity or someone you want to get revenge on. You put their face onto an embarrassing video where they're doing something that they're not actually doing.
That is
porn.
Okay. Yeah, that is an application of That is an application of it. Yeah. So
that's the situation which I've heard of it.
Of course.
There's also the conspiracy theory side.
Yes. So yes. I'll tell you exactly what a deepfake is. So a deepfake is a piece of media that is made using machine learning and artificial intelligence that replaces someone in an existing image or video with someone else. What that means is there's kind of essentially computer programs that are very, very good at picking out parts of people's faces and mapping them onto other people's faces. So all you need to do is just feed them a bunch of videos. Mm. So for example, Luke here has got roughly 8 years of video footage of himself.
Sure, yeah.
Public online. Anyone could take
very
that
true.
And take someone else who's got a lot of got a lot of footage on them. Let's say Steve Carell, who's been in a lot of movies. They could run both of those faces through the sort of machine learning algorithm and boom, swap them.
The key thing is you get pictures of my face from every angle and doing as many facial expressions as mm-hmm. possible. And then you can feed that into a computer and it figures out what my face looks like and how it morphs when I move my face. And then it tracks the same on the other face and sort of puts one on the other.
Bear in mind, this is stuff
that even matches lighting. It even matches lighting.
It's
brilliant.
Yeah.
It can match lighting. It's amazing. There's some great videos out there of people swapping, say, celeb. So Bill Hader does fantastic impressions. Mm. And someone has swapped his impressions, their faces onto him as he does those impressions.
The people he's doing the impressions of.
Yeah, the people he's doing the impressions of. So in one instance, he's in an interview, he's talking about Tom Cruise, he does Cruise impression, and suddenly his face becomes Tom Cruise, and it's unsettling. Watching the change is unsettling. Because
the key thing that's so brilliant about really the way real. Bill Hader does it is that he also is able to mimic the facial movements and the way of, like, what kind of smile the person does, stuff like that. Like it's another level of skill there where he even looks like the person without the deep fake to a certain extent because of the way he holds his face.
Mm. That's the thing. And this is what tricks. If you're used to watching Bill Hader do impressions, which I mean, I am, you watch that. And if you're not really paying attention, you're like, you don't notice straight away. Mm. And then you realize, oh wow, no, that's not his face. It actually looks like Tom Cruise because it's switched to Tom Cruise. It's and then he does Seth Rogen. And it switches to Seth Rogen, and it's unsettling.
Too real.
Yeah, so, a deepfake, effectively, machine learning, artificial intelligence used to swap one person's face onto someone else's face. Face off, essentially.
But
instead of with, like, you know, scalpels and knives, with computers. And speaking of face off, that's not nearly as invasive.
No.
But speaking of face off, Nicolas Cage was in Face Off, and Nicolas Cage became almost a face for deepfakes in that people were constantly putting his face into other films. Just wherever. Because Nicolas Cage is just kind of a meme online, so that just happened. Yeah. If you search for deepfakes, one of the first images that comes up is probably one of Nicolas Cage. So the name deepfake actually came, it started appearing in major newspapers in early 2018. They were kind of around and in the public sort of knowledge from 2017. Originally, the sources used deepfake to specifically talk about porn or pornography.
People were putting celebrities that they liked in porn, weren't they?
Yeah. I mean, the whole thing. Celebrity porn is a massive thing. And beforehand, it was lookalikes. And now it's just body doubles, which is ridiculous. And kind of illegal. I mean,
that seems like it should be.
This is the issue. Technology advances and we don't have laws in place for... we don't have laws in place for them. I think there are laws now that kind of ban that. But at the time, it's one of those murky areas.
Yeah.
So the name deepfake comes from obviously fake being fake and deep being deep learning, which refers to a kind of machine learning that uses layered neural networks, which effectively kind of enhances the machine learning algorithms. So a neural network is... Luke, do you want to give an explanation of a neural network? Do you know what that is?
Yeah, so I believe off the top of my head that the specific type of neural network that's used for deepfaking is called a convolutional neural network, which is where you get layers that feed back to each other, as far as I can remember off the top of my head. Now, how this works basically is it's kind of like trial and error. You're giving it a desired output, and then it's testing how well it's done that. And then it feeds back to itself on how to improve. And then you give it some level of feedback. Or in some neural networks, it gives itself feedback with a different neural network. So they're training each other. You'll have more specific information about this.
I mean, no, that's perfect. I mean, there's not much point in getting super deep into how this works, because ultimately we could sit for an hour and talk specifically just about how machine learning and neural networks work. But ultimately, all you need to take away from it is the computer is kind of teaching itself.
And the reason why it's called a neural network is because the hierarchy of different layers, hence where you were talking about layered neural networks, is mapped out in such a way that it mimics the way that our brains learn things. So that's where neural comes from, as in neurons, like we have in our brain. And that's why it's such a vastly different way of doing things, where you're able to give a computer a task and it just figures out how to do that task within the set parameters you've given it. And what's so scary about it is at no point does it write any code that can be understood by a human. You cannot understand how a neural network has come to the conclusion. It comes to the conclusions it has. It's called a black box, which means that you can't open the box and see inside it. You just have to trust that it works.
This is the this is the interesting thing about machine learning and this massive jump kind of in computer technology, because beforehand, obviously, if you want a computer to do something,
you have to tell it how to do it.
Yeah, you got to type in the code and say, okay, do this. And if that happens, then do this other thing. Whereas with machine learning, it's a case of like...
the machine figures it out.
I want you to do this. Figure it out.
This is the end point. You fill out the rest. You take your own journey there.
So it's effectively like finding someone off the street and saying, hey, look, I need you to solve this problem. And they're like, okay, cool. And they just write down the answer. And you're like, well, how did you get there? They're like, no. And walk off. You don't know.
The day we don't know how our machines are figuring things out seems like a pretty significant day.
That day is long past.
Well, yeah,
that's how YouTube works.
Yeah, I guess.
That's it. Exactly. So the YouTube algorithm, the Twitter algorithm, the Instagram algorithm, not a single person knows how they work. You've got people on YouTube who are saying, oh, if you post this in your description, it gets you pushed higher up. Oh, if you post this, it gets you pushed lower down. They don't know. We don't know. There is no way for us to know. The only way for us to understand how the YouTube algorithm really works is through basically trial and error and kind of spotting patterns.
Well, so you can actually do, with neural networks, you can actually do a reverse neural network where you get a neural network to understand how a neural network works. I don't know much about that process. But essentially you can train a neural network to work out how another neural network works.
We can't even figure out how we work.
That's like the solution to the problem being the same my house is on fire. How do I put it out?
More fire,
I guess.
That is what they do with some bushfires. They do some controlled fires to control the fire. Very weird. Fighting fire with fire.
It's literally fighting fire with fire. We don't really understand how neural networks work, but they seem, we can clearly get a neural network to figure out how another one works, but even then, like, it's layered. We're never going to understand how they all work.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a scary time to live in, I think.
What's the future of machine learning? How far do you think it will go?
It will control everything.
Have you seen Terminator?
This is what I've been thinking the whole time. I'm like, I don't want like humanoid robots coming out of nowhere.
Well, it depends what you ask the computers to do. If it's wipe out all humanity, well, maybe they will.
Yes.
Yeah. Gotta be careful.
World peace.
World peace is world death.
No humans on it.
No humans, no war. But yeah, I want to give you guys a quick history of video and photo manipulation, because obviously deepfakes are just the kind of last in a long line of messing with the truth. So obviously we know that we can mess with filters through Photoshop, but what happened before Photoshop? I would have thought that manipulating photos was much harder. You wouldn't really be able to falsify things nearly as well as you can now with Photoshop. But it turns out that apparently pretty much everything you can do in Photoshop is based on something you were able to do before.
Yeah, there would have been a way to do it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Significantly harder, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, much harder, but still possible.
Yeah.
So in 1826, Joseph Nicephore Niépce, I don't know how to pronounce his name, he's French. A man invented the photograph. He'd had lots of different tries, so arguably you could say it was 10 years earlier. Mm-hmm. I'm going with 1826 because that's probably the best guess for when he actually definitely invented what we would now call a photograph. So in 1860, not too long after 1826, there was a very major case of a photographic forgery. Lincoln's head, Abraham Lincoln, the, I think, 16th president of the United States, there was a print of him which had a picture of his head superimposed on an engraving of John Calhoun, who was a racist Southern politician, John Calhoun's body. It's the same Lincoln head from the $5 bill. Yeah, but the difference is in this picture, the image was flipped. So Lincoln's mole is on the wrong side. I'll show you it now.
I've definitely seen this image before. I didn't know that was fake.
What?
It's a fake image.
Yeah.
That's not Lincoln's body. Now, this is the thing. Lincoln was a tall, gangly, kind of ugly guy. No offense, Mr. Lincoln. President. But that was, in order to win his campaign, he had a specific photographer that made him look much better in photos, like making him curl his hands so you couldn't see how long his fingers were, giving him an extra large collar to make his neck look normal sized. Genuinely using very harsh lighting on his face to sort of hide the
to face tune in real time,
literally. Yeah. But that's and then I think it was that same photographer that did this superposed head on someone else's body.
Was it to get back at him for something?
No, it wasn't malicious to get back at him for anything. It was just done as here is a photo of Lincoln sort of thing, and maybe a little bit to get back at the racist guy, because the racist guy
maybe, yeah,
obviously didn't get on with Lincoln very well.
Yeah.
Lincoln is quite historically known as not the most racist man in the world.
Yeah.
You know? But that was not the end of photo manipulation. No, it went on further. So retouching became more and more of a thing. You guys know how photographs worked. Mm-hmm. You would get a negative, which you would then treat and get the actual image back from that. So the actual retouching process is the same regardless of the type of negative that you're altering. After a negative had like been exposed, basically captured an image, you would have to develop it in a dark room using certain chemicals so that it wasn't sensitive to light anymore. So basically how cameras work, or how cameras used to work, is effectively you've got a material, a film, photographic film or something like that, that is very sensitive to light. Now, when you hit the camera, it opens it up and the light hits this film and it saves basically the image on the film. You can then treat it with chemicals so that it's not sensitive to light anymore. And there you go. You've got an image that stays there. Now, they had these things called retouching desks, wherein you would put your image in and you had sort of a mirror below it, which reflected light up so you could see the negative, and then a bit of wood above it so that no other light came in. And there were so many cool things you could do with these photos. Like, give me one thing from Photoshop that you think you probably wouldn't be able to do.
So you could manipulate them while they were developing.
No, so it's sort of developed.
Oh, okay.
You've got your negative. before you basically get your actual image from the negative, you can edit the negative. Give me sort of one basic feature from Photoshop that you think they might not have had.
Magic wand.
Luke.
I mean, any basic feature?
I was asking Jamp because Jamp wasn't going to be difficult.
What about the zoom tool?
It's clone stamp.
Getting closer.
Clone stamping.
Ah.
I can imagine they could do clone stamping.
Well, it wasn't exactly a clone stamp. That all kind of comes from the same sort of thing, which is the clone stamp is basically filling in an area you don't want to be there anymore, kind of. Do you know what I mean? If you want to hide something, you use a clone stamp. Generally, let's say there's some graffiti on a wall. You want to get rid of that, you will probably clone stamp it away. Now,
go even simpler. It's like if you got a photo of you, you've got a pimple on your face.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
You just take some skin from another part of your face, put that over the pimple, pimple's gone.
Yeah. Now, they could do that. Genuinely, they used a mix of sort of scalpels or abrasive things that were abrasive and pencils. Pencils to make things darker, and scalpels to scratch away and make things lighter.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind that because it's a negative, when you fill in with a pencil, with the actual photo, you're actually making it lighter because the negative is the opposite of the actual photo. So to get rid of freckles, they would just fill them in with pencil.
Get rid of freckles? I love freckles. What are you playing at?
I mean, not just that, but they could do some. I've got a photo here, and I'll link all of these in the description. I've got a photo here that I want to show you guys that is absolutely incredible. It wasn't just a case of removing blemishes or getting rid of freckles or anything like that. I have an image here of someone completely remodeling someone's neck. Look at this. And if you're listening at home, click the link in the description and have a look.
Whoa. That's mad.
Mad.
How?
I was looking at this and I was like, that's not possible. These are photographs from the 1800s. From the 19th century. And they were photoshopping. And in fact, a lot of the tools on Photoshop are actually based on the tools that they would use at these retouching desks, which is why the images look the way that they do on Photoshop, which is why the icons
really
look the way they do on Photoshop.
They don't really make sense in the context of Photoshop, do they?
They don't. It's the same as a floppy disk being the save icon. We've not used floppy disks for
quite a while, since the 1800s, probably.
Well, yeah, so roughly about then. So, I mean, like I said, they had scalpels for etching. They used pencils. I mean, they could reshape noses, ears, jaws, necks. You could smooth out skin. You could get rid of wrinkles. Mm. Like I said, you could get rid of freckles.
Is this why we have on Photoshop, there's like the burn tool, there's the sponge tool, there's all, like, these different weird tools.
All the transfer modes, I believe, are based on real things as well.
Wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Another great thing, which I loved, is the they lightened areas and then they darkened areas. Once they'd done the lightening of the areas, they could then obviously move on to the darkening with a pencil or a brush dipped in ink or watercolor paint. What they would also do was apply a retouching medium, which effectively meant that if they made any mistakes, they could just wash it all away and start again, which is ridiculous.
It doesn't affect the image.
They had Control Z.
They had Control Z.
Obviously, if you use a scalpel, you can't take that back. But they had Control Z.
What?
I mean, it's more of a clear all, but still. I mean,
yeah. It's kind of like you just close the image and reopen it.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty brilliant.
It's like applying a layer in Photoshop. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got some quotes here. So this one is from Camera Magazine in 1904. Ooh. The most frequent use of the knife by the professional photographer is to reduce the waistline on pictures of some of their female sitters whose embon point may be too apparent.
What does that mean, embon point?
I don't know, but basically we talk about Photoshop being a massive issue for slimming people down in modern magazines.
They've been doing that forever.
Oh, we've been...
But they've been doing that with corsets from before even photos. Like, that's
like in
just
real life,
It's not a photo problem. It's just a sexism
and those,
problem.
And those massive hoopy dresses that go out like a beach ball.
To be fair, I think corsets are probably a bit worse than photoshopping. I'm kind of glad we've gotten to this
physical
point.
Effect.
Well, I don't agree, because corsets, at least when somebody's wearing a corset in a photo, that is actually what they look like. That look is attainable in real life.
I mean more like wearing a corset as a day-to-day. Well, the expectation...
Oh, sure.
Corsets,
I mean,
corsets physically alter your body.
Like the yeah.
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 Like, just like
damage
that sort
to
of
society
waste.
Is stronger from Photoshop than it is from corsets, I would say.
I would disagree.
Okay.
Because I think that, and here's why, because I think that the damage done by Photoshop is the same as the damage done by corsets, but corsets also causes physical damage.
Right.
Because
they're the same underlying cause, though, which is so sad.
Which is sad,
it's the same sort of like body dysmorphic, underlying body dysmorphia cause, isn't it? Very sad.
Well, I think it's more make women feel bad about themselves so we can get money from them.
Is that not body dysmorphia, though, in some way? If women have an expectation of what their body looks like,
yeah.
It doesn't
yeah.
look like
I mean,
it. It's body dysmorphia.
Yeah.
It's just very sad, isn't it?
It is sad. It's awful that we exploit them in that way, I think.
Yeah.
In fact, it's, you know...
Then we make makeup.
Yeah, it's terrible that you could look back through history and be like, oh no, we have always been making women feel bad about themselves just so we can sell things. Cool. Good to know.
The three of us,
things
changed.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Honestly, I'm surprised no one's caught us for it yet. I've been doing it for ages. I actually invented eyeliner. It was me, you know?
Did you? That's amazing.
I love some.
Can I have some of your money?
Yes. It will make you pretty. I didn't actually invent eyeliner, but I do have a fact about the invention of what's Maybelline?
Maybe
mascara.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Mascara. It was
that's been drilled into our brains.
I think a man's sister invented it, or perhaps his wife, and it was basically kind of a mix of oil and effectively Vaseline, and then the man kind of worked with it and made it work better as mascara, oil. And then started selling it as a way to kind of like enhance your eyelashes.
Oil.
And then he named it after his the woman in his life that had inspired it. Maybelline.
What was she? Maybelline. Oh, right. What's her name? Sorry, I forgot her name. She called Mabel. What was her name?
Maybelline.
Mabel is quite
Her name was Maybelline. I thought maybe her name was
it's
Mabel,
a nice name.
And then he also made it out of Vaseline, so it was Maybelline.
Oh, maybe that is right.
It's weird that mascara is seen as feminine, but it's got mask in it.
Wow, that's
Femscara.
Femscara. That sounds like a planet on some like
in some sci-fi.
Going into the galaxy.
That's it. It's literally Guardians, isn't it? I'm just looking this up. So Williams noticed his older sister, Mabel. Her name was Mabel, applying Vaseline and coal dust to her eyelashes to give them a darker, fuller look.
Coal dust.
And he used a chemistry set to turn it into what is effectively mascara. So her name was Mabel, and the name Maybelline came from that.
Where'd the lean come from?
Vaseline.
Vaseline, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
Come on, James. Keep up.
Sorry. Where did the mask come from?
Take the mask off, James. Take it off. So, yeah. I mean, retouching was widespread in Europe by the 1850s. Germans were apparently really, really good. They pioneered all of these sort of retouching methods. And then I'm going to skip ahead from the 1850s to 1982. Obviously, there was a massive history of retouching, but let's jump to 1982 with one of the first kind of modern scandals of retouching, which was the National Geographic case. Now, there was a photo of the pyramids of Giza in Egypt taken
and made them more pointy. They're not that pointy.
That's the problem with them.
They're actually not very pointy. One of them is quite literally flat on top in this image.
Yeah.
I can see why they used Liquify on those pyramids.
Oh, maybe
disgusting.
Not. I was going to take a guess. I was going to say, did they remove the city from the background?
No, there's no.
That's from a certain angle.
Yeah. So the photo was by Gordon Gahan, or however it said. Anyway, one of the issue with it was that they had a horizontal image. Now, National Geographic is a magazine. It's vertical.
Yes.
So they just squooshed the two pyramids slightly closer together.
They were holding hands.
Literally. I'll show you the difference. and again, these are all available in the description.
Oh, well, to be fair.
This is the one that they used, and this is the original.
At that angle...
You can barely tell the difference.
I'm going to say it's fine. I'm going to lock in fine for for 100 quid.
Yeah, but you got to remember, this is coming from National Geographic, and love, like, the whole thing is about, like, nature and about, like, natural world and things like that. And
they've got to put it on their cover, though.
Move around a bit, man. Like,
So here's the thing. So the photographer was actually the one who saw it and complained. Yes. Now, the reason that the National Geographic did it, and the reason that they said, well, we don't really see much of a problem with it, was because they didn't falsify sort of any really information. They just kind of showed the pyramids from a different point of view, wherein you could see the pyramids look
you
like
could
that.
See that.
You could see them from that angle. Yeah,
if you'd stepped slightly to, you know, to one side.
Yeah.
But this was kind of the beginning of this sort of whole sort of digital photography and meddling with images sort of thing. This was kind of the start of it. Now, the photographer, Gordon, he also had a bit of a... Because of this whole scandal, this kind of flew under the radar. It's interesting. He paid, apparently... paid the men in the photo to repeatedly walk past so he could get the right framing for the photo that he wanted.
To me, that's more falsified than what National Geographic did.
That's it, right? This is what I'm saying. And this is an interesting point. There's many ways to falsify an image. And if you do it in the stage of sort of actually taking the image itself could be false, but then you could also edit the image afterwards. Which one is worse? Do you know what I mean? Are they both equal?
Depends what you think a photograph is. I mean, if a photograph is a capturing of a moment, that moment did really happen. Whereas when you take the jump to altering what no longer is the photo a thing that really happened.
Yeah, but then I 100% agree on that. But then if you present a photo of some men on camels, say, walking past the pyramids in that particular way, and they didn't actually, like, had you not paid them, they wouldn't have walked past in that way, and you kind of present it as though here is something I've captured, when actually it's something you've set up. It's a little bit murky there. Either way.
Yeah. It's like in the same way reality TV produces these, like Love Island and stuff, and there's all these storylines on the show that are actually set up by producers.
Exactly, it is really similar to
that. But it's presented as real.
Exactly. Yeah. It's
got like this icky feeling about it. You're like,
ugh. It's like what's worse? People like letting them just roam free and then editing it to be something that it isn't, or writing it to be something that it isn't and then putting that out, you know?
Right. Sure.
It's just I thought it was an interesting differentiation there.
I think it's a nice picture.
So actually what you're saying is it was double fake. It wasn't even just single fake.
Yeah, I think it was quite funny that the photographer
nothing
complained
about the image is real
when he paid for them to go past. Like,
yeah.
But anyway, National Geographic's director of photography, Tom Kennedy, said, "We no longer use that technology to manipulate elements in a photo simply to achieve a more compelling graphic effect." Effectively,
I think that's the point, though, isn't it? Because the whole appreciation of nature is that nature is wonderful in itself, and so it is a bit of a step, like. If you found out that National Geographic had like photoshopped a monkey into something when there wasn't a monkey there, you'd be understandably a little bit surprised. And it's a celebration of the natural world. And so
it's a different thing in my head.
I would personally, if I was working at National Geographic, I would just put an outright ban on editing photos in that way. But then the issue is that when you've got like Lightroom, you know, you could change the lighting of a photo.
The colors, yeah.
You could change the coloration of the photo. You can any
How
slight
far do we go?
Yeah, exactly. Any slight modification of the lighting is still touching up the photo. Is that acceptable?
I would say ideally no, but because you have competitor magazines who will do that to get ahead of you. Sadly, that's the state of the world, and you have to use the tools at your disposal.
Yeah, and the thing is that in this case, it was to make a slightly more visually appealing image that fit on the magazine. It wasn't something that you couldn't see. It wasn't completely falsified, and they didn't add or really remove anything major.
If they'd like photoshopped in those men on the camels, I'd be like, that's something different.
Yeah, but they just moved.
They were just rearranging what was already there.
Yeah, they just kind of...
I can forgive that.
Move two pyramids close together. It's really... I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing to consider where you sit on that line.
It's a really arbitrary line, isn't it?
It is. It's such an... It's either you agree with no editing whatsoever, or you don't care. Those are the two options you can have.
Or you put yourself in the middle. Like I just did.
But that is kind of the history of, that's a kind of a major history of how we've edited photos up until now. Obviously there's video editing, but this is the kind of the first time where we can basically almost in real time completely change what happened on video. You know, we've always had the thing since Photoshop came about, we always knew if you see an image, it might not be true. In fact, the internet has kind of trained us to think you see an image, it almost certainly hasn't happened. You know what I mean?
I mean, we've already got the technology on like some small scale on our phones, like Snapchat filters and Instagram filters tracking your face. You can face swap with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't look as convincing, but
you can still, the technology, you can still do it.
Yeah.
There's only a matter of time before we're actually able to convincingly do it. And it will probably be an app. Soon enough, we're going to have a case where anyone can just download the deepfake app and say, okay, here's Nick Cage. And this is me. Put me in Nick Cage's films now.
This whole thing is essentially a massive reason why something like the technology behind Bitcoin will become so important in the future. Because what you have with Bitcoin is, the way that Bitcoin works is you distribute the ledger of information across thousands or tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of locations, meaning that if anyone tries to submit false information into the system, the rest of them outvote it. And the only way you'd ever be able to steal Bitcoin is if you owned, for example, more than a certain percentage of the Bitcoin mining rigs, which is incredibly difficult to do even for a nation state. And so if we have some kind of, because we're going to get into a position where things that have been said, because you can also do this neural network deepfaking with voices now.
Yeah.
Things that have been said, things that have happened, will have to be decided by a majority vote, rather than by sources that we supposedly trust from individual sources or a couple of sources. We'll have to have some kind of distributed idea of what is true and what is not.
I mean, it's so true. If you think about movies, and how you go to a movie, you've got suspension of disbelief, but I can watch a movie where, say, Chris Evans is aged by 50 years fairly convincingly. Now, that's a billion-dollar movie. There's a mass amount of money that went into developing that technology and a mass amount of skill that's required to pull that off. Someone's come along and gotten... And up until recently, this whole idea of swapping one person's face onto someone else's face was something we could only do in movies, effectively.
Yeah.
High-budget movies. And now we can convincingly do it from a laptop. In your house.
Soon to be from a phone.
Yeah. And I mean, you need enough technical know-how to download a program that someone's got for creating deepfakes and running it.
Do you think we'll get to a point where video evidence can no longer be video evidence?
Yes. Yeah. I genuinely think within the next 5 years.
Mad.
It's just, the fact is that all you need to convincingly create a fake Trump video, for example, is a decent studio, a half decent studio, videos of Trump, and that's basically it.
Well, so there is some hope on the horizon, which is that the way that a deep fake works is its goal is not to create. So say, for example, you take Trump as an example, right? And you have a video of him running naked down a stream and and you actually have that as a real video, right? And then you have a body double who looks exactly the same as him. And then you get that body double running down a stream and you deepfake the face on. And just for the sake of this argument, imagine those videos were literally pixel by pixel accurate, like to the human eye. They were the same video once you deepfaked Trump's face onto the body double. Now, the way that a neural network is making these things is that it is it's in the same way that, sort of, as far as I understand it, it's the same way as in audio compression. When you're listening to this, podcast, whether you're listening on YouTube or podcasts or wherever you're listening, you are hearing a computer's estimation of what I sound like to a clarity that is enough that your human ear can't tell the difference. But a computer can tell the difference very well. It's just good enough that our limited senses think that it's a human voice, which is, and our senses are not particularly complex from a data perspective. And so although you may be able to get a deepfaked Trump video that looks real to our eyes,
people,
there's also neural networks that are being developed to detect whether something is a deepfake, even if it's not obviously a deepfake visually. You can detect signatures of it being a deepfake. Now, there will also then be a neural network that hides the signature of it being a deepfake, and it will be just an arms race going on forever, whether you can detect a deepfake, whether you can pretend you're not a deepfake, and forever and ever and ever and ever.
I think that, I mean, you're absolutely right. I read some articles that were very interesting about how to break deepfakes effectively, how to crack them. And they were great. I've got them linked in the description. But I think the key point here is that regardless of whether you can prove that a deepfake is fake or not, it doesn't really matter. If you think about it, how can you explain to the majority of the population that this video that is like unquestionably real looking is fake? And you say, okay, and we know that it's fake because this computer said that it's fake. There are still going to be a lot of people that just aren't going to believe.
Just not going to believe it.
They'd much rather believe what they've seen rather than what a computer has said.
Of course,
is correct or not.
And also,
but that's why
that's
we have courts. Just a public opinion, a court of public opinion.
Oh no, absolutely. That could hold up in court, but still, regardless.
The damage once it's been broadcast. Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And you say in court as though it's just legal matters. I'm not even just talking about like, oh, we have to take you to court because you've got video evidence of someone doing this. I mean, video comes out of the president saying X, Y, Z. The president's not going to win the next election. Or the president.
Of course. But this is because we live in a society where we have traditionally trusted video to be a reputable source of information. And it just takes education for us, like very early on in life, in school, we're just taught, hey, this is how things get faked. That's just how it works now. This is the world we're in. And then something comes out and people won't automatically, like if their brains are educated enough, they won't automatically take that to be true on face value.
No, absolutely not.
100 years from now, say.
I just think the key point of deepfakes here, and what I find so interesting about them, is that this is technology that has happened so quickly. Yes, we're aware of this kind of thing in films, but that's exactly it. It's in films. This has jumped up so incredibly quickly that people the general population just aren't ready to understand this.
Yeah.
I would assume. I would not want to have to sit and try to explain what a deepfake is to my mum.
Oh God, that would be so hard, wouldn't it?
I think genuinely using that sort of test as could you explain this to a parent or someone that you work with that's in their say 40s and up? If you couldn't, then you're probably going to have trouble convincing the public that
you couldn't necessarily understand and explain the underlying technology, but you could explain the concept. And obviously people are not necessarily that plastic in their understanding as they grow older. But you could explain the concept of, look, mum, this is the world we're in now. From now on, everything you see as video is not necessarily real. And it might take a long time to get used to that, of course, but I don't think that, you know, you don't have to understand the underlying technology to understand, oh, if you see something, it might not be true anymore. And that is kind of the world we're in now already with all the news that you'll read, like all the news, like my parents have had to learn about the fact that if someone calls and says they're from the bank, they might not be from the bank. If you get an email, it might not be from Netflix, it might not be from Facebook, it might not be from Apple.
Absolutely.
It's a learning process.
I'm not saying that they need to understand everything behind it. I just mean that you can say to someone, you can't trust what you see. And that's one thing they can absolutely understand. Yeah, I can't necessarily trust everything that I see, but there is this kind of disconnect between
logical understanding and emotional understanding.
Yeah, sorry, like, I just got
you have a reaction to it straight away.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's this whole thing of there's this whole thing of like, you can explain it to your parent or you can explain it to someone and yeah, they can, yeah, potentially understand what you're talking about. But when it comes down to it, if they see a video of someone, if they see a video of someone doing something, even though they're told, oh, this is just one of those fake things,
they'll be part of that. It's like, oh, but,
yeah, you know,
but it looks real.
Yeah. It's like, well, when you wake up from, it's like when you wake up from a dream and someone has annoyed you in a dream and you wake up and you're like, I still got a bad feeling about them.
Yeah. Well, this is what is so interesting is like, I think that in the future, we're going to have to, as technology, like, so say 100 years ago, you learned a trade and that was pretty much your trade for life. And now every 5 years, trades are being replaced. Like, and that will go up and up and up exponentially. And so the type of teaching we do to kids these days is going to have to start evolving away from, for example, memory, because you don't need memory anymore. You've got the internet, you've got notes, you've got your phone, you've got everything at your fingertips. The idea that we're teaching memory still is like things to memorize.
It's ludicrous.
Ridiculous. Mm. And so we're going to have to teach our kids how to evolve, essentially, from a mental perspective, how to change your thought patterns. Things you thought were true no longer are true because the world's evolving at such a gigantically fast pace. And the sad thing is that as that happens and as that gets faster and faster, the divide between people who are able to adapt and people who are not able to adapt is going to get massive very quickly. Mm. Like, we think evolution happens on the scale of millions of years. It's not going to happen in the mental world of millions of years. It's going to be on the order of weeks at some point, probably. You get left behind so quickly.
I mean, it's like memes on Twitter. If you take a few days off Twitter, if you take a few days off Twitter, you come back, there's a new meme, and you have got no idea what's going on. And exactly. You've missed the boat. You've then got to try and catch up because, okay, that meme may die in a few days. It's coming back in a few months when it's getting fed into another meme. It's a
couple of years later after that, it'll come back.
It'll come back. And if you miss that and you can't catch up, you're gone because it changes so quickly.
So I wonder if we're going to start because there's a thing that goes around every once in a while. I know it was the thing that was being said when I was growing up, which was like, evolution is over because we're keeping people alive who would naturally die if it wasn't for the technology we've created. And actually, evolution isn't over in that sense. It's just that the type of evolution we evolve towards is different. And I wonder if at some point we're going to, as long as we don't get destroyed by the AI overlords that are coming for us, we're going to probably evolve towards being creatures that don't necessarily evolve on the genetic level anymore. We're going to become creatures that are essentially like really fast neural networks where we're not evolving which type of body we build. We're evolving because we can already change our body and we'll be able to change our body increasingly with technology over the next like 10, couple of decades, right? And we'll evolve instead to be able to change our beliefs incredibly quickly. Because right now it's a very slow process to change your beliefs.
I think.
And to trust data as well, because we don't put any of our beliefs based on data at all on a psychological feeling.
Oh, no, absolutely not. I think we people that say we've stopped evolving don't quite understand evolution. We stopped natural selection to a pretty extreme degree. We don't really have natural selection anymore. I have terrible eyesight. Natural selection dictates that I would probably not be able to make it to a point of, passing on my genes. And yet, here I am, 22 years old, and still miraculously alive without being able to see a foot in front of me.
We've stopped subconscious of evolution,
it's literally natural. It's literally just the natural selection part of evolution that we've managed to kind of stop because it's no longer natural selection does still kind of exist. But the whole point of natural selection is that you can't then pass on your genes. There are very, very few things that are passed on genetically that right now will stop you from producing offspring. There are some diseases that are genetic that will, potentially kill you before you're able to pass on your genes. But the majority of things, we're able to make sure that people last long enough to produce kids. And that's all you need to do. So when it comes to evolution, we could potentially evolve into being people beings that are able to adapt quickly, mentally quite quickly. But ultimately, I think once we've got gene editing down to a T, where you can, on the fly, rewrite your genetic code, give this kid a scan. Ooh, looks like he might be at risk for schizophrenia there. Let's just, we fixed that. No worries. Your doctor appointment done. See you in a year. Once we get to that point where we're rewriting DNA on the fly, I think evolution is, it's kind of over for us in terms of natural selection.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you get to that point, you've got computer systems that are incredibly complicated, that you've got the human genome that is completely mapped and you understand what every single gene does. Mm-hmm. And you're able to sort of read DNA, like read and sequence people's DNA on massive scales. Then you can track evolution, because evolution is a change in genes. So yes, it could sneak up on you over time. But if we get to a point where we're basically able to map everyone's genetic code and we know what every gene does, and we've got computer systems that are able to handle that, you basically got a track of evolution. And if you see something veering in the wrong direction, let's just fix it.
Do the selection.
Like that is genuinely a society Madness. That could potentially exist based on the technology we've got now being extended slightly. More that's a black mirror. Yeah. That's a kind of a Black Mirror story, you know? That's something that could happen.
Absolutely.
Oh, man. Evolution
is
so interesting.
What was that film? Gattaca, kind of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
Kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, evolution isn't something that's going to die necessarily. It's just something that we're going to get a much better handle on.
Yeah. The only reason why I meant in terms of evolution is that if the divide between people who are able to adapt and change and the people who are not able to adapt and change is going to increase. Not that whether there's no moral, I'm not making a moral judgment on that. In some ways it's horrible. That will probably in some way affect the success of those gene lines. If they're able to adapt to a new world. And so the gene lines that get passed on will be the ones that are best at adapting.
The thing is, I want to agree with you, but I just don't believe that
we'll fix that before that happens.
No, I just don't think that that's something that's going to affect passing your genes on.
Really? Okay, fair enough. Yeah. The bar is so low for passing your genes on. It's like everybody can do that unless you physically can't. And even if you physically can't, we'll probably figure out a way of doing that, and we already have.
We have done. Like that's my point. So this is and I'm not saying that you've misunderstood it, but this is the general thing that I often see when people are talking about evolution, that sometimes there's this kind of this misclick where they think this potentially more beneficial trait will win out against the less beneficial trait. But ultimately, it doesn't matter what's beneficial and what's not. It doesn't matter what's more energy efficient and what's not. All that matters is, can this thing pass on its genes?
Well,
can the other one pass on its genes better?
Mm. Yeah, well, the only, what I mean is that that's assuming that we continue to live in a world where genetic selection, people passing on their genes is not controlled in some way.
So long as we don't get into eugenics, then.
As long as we don't get into an eugenics world, which isn't a given.
It's definitely not.
Especially if you get like hand over control of your society to an artificial intelligence that makes completely unemotional decisions and purely decisions that are best for either it or whatever you've programmed it to do, it may come to that conclusion.
Not to mention that there's no way to program. There's right now, there's not really any way to program some kind of artificial intelligence without imparting your own biases on it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, the fact is we've seen all these sort of this AI technology that's inherently racist or sexist, and whatever you build to control your society, it's still going to have the lasting effect of those prejudices.
Yeah.
So that's another thing to watch out for.
Yeah. And I do wonder if, like, at some point, like, what are we going to keep doing? Like, getting a bigger and bigger population forever? Like, something's got to give.
Expand
surely.
Out to other planets, man. That's why we're working on Mars.
Bloody hell.
If we make, I think if we manage to make it off this planet, we're
like
a
moldy
far.
Bread. The Earth is bread and we are the mold. And we're just going.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, okay, this is rotting food in your fridge, right? If you manage to let that mold get out of whatever, like,
it's
like
containing it,
your fridge is gone. And the fridge is the universe right now, man. Like, I genuinely think if we get off this planet and manage to get to Mars and thrive on Mars, no stopping us. We're out there.
Further and further and further.
Okay, I'm just going to go quickly through how deepfakes were developed because it's actually quite interesting. So, first off, in the 1990s, sort of academic institutions were developing them, and then it got kind of picked up by amateurs in online communities. And this is what I love about the internet. So amateurs started picking it up, and they were really pushing it forward. So there was obviously academic research into it. There was the Video Rewrite Program published in 1997. But then what really pushed it forward, as I said, was these amateurs online. So I'll get into the amateurs in a little bit, but just quickly to run over the academic projects. There was the Synthesizing Obama program, which used video footage of Barack Obama. The Face-to-Face program, which was published in 2016, which modifies footage of a person's face, which shows them mimicking facial expressions of another person in real time. So it's kind of like the Face Swap app, effectively. Mm-hmm. And then in 2018, researchers at Berkeley, the University of California, published a paper which introduced a fake dancing app that can create an impression of like really good dancing using AI. And then it uses deepfakes to it expands deepfakes to being like the entire body, when previously it's obviously just been
I've seen
head
an account
and face.
Like this on TikTok.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not entirely convincing, but there's a guy that takes TikTok dances and he just stands in front of his camera and there's a thing that animates his body to do the dance. It's ridiculous.
So that's all of the kind of academic stuff. That's the broad strokes of the academic stuff. The really interesting part for me is the amateur stuff. There was a Reddit user named Deepfakes. This is potentially where the name Deepfake came from. But anyways, the Reddit user named Deepfakes. So it was Reddit, our Deepfakes, that shared a bunch of different deepfakes videos, and they really pushed it forwards. And the Nicolas Cage stuff came from there. And there was so much work done on this that it's really pushing forward the field. So there's still Safer Work Deepfakes, r/safer work deepfakes on Reddit, they're still churning them out. And like, it's insane. I mean, obviously used it for porn, which is terrible and awful. And this always happens. People always use it for porn in the worst ways. But the Safer Work, the cool stuff they did with, like, say, Nicolas Cage in other films is incredible. Like, I genuinely, without people just hobbyists doing it online, we wouldn't be where we are with deepfakes right now.
Yeah.
And yes, they're a kind of terrifying technology, but they're also really, really interesting and amazing. I mean, we could have a potential wherein at some point, if you're going to do like a historical film or a biopic, if you're going to do a biopic, you just have an actor come in and put someone else's face on them. Easy.
It is going to be used by the film industry in that way, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean that's somewhere that we can reach.
Either that or there. I mean, photorealistic 3D animation is pretty close as well. Like, it's already there with many types of objects and types of scenes.
Exactly. Well,
if they need to do reshoots and the actor's not available.
Oh my God, yeah. You get that in your contract.
Henry Cavill with the mustache.
Again.
You wouldn't have that problem.
Mission Impossible,
Actors could do it for themselves if they want to look however they want to look. Chris Evans always wants to grow a beard, but he has to shave it for Captain America. Just deep fake Chris Evans on Chris Evans. But you've also had things like Fake App being launched, so it's moved into the commercial space. Soon enough, there is literally going to be an app where you can convincingly deep fake anyone. I genuinely
probably be a TikTok filter, won't it?
Probably will.
Probably will.
Yeah, that's the Chinese government is developing it right now. Like, but genuinely though, deep fakes have made leaps and bounds in the past few years, and it's almost scary that we've not been able to catch up yet.
I suppose actually the democratization of this kind of technology, like for example something that sounds ridiculous like putting it into a TikTok filter or an Instagram filter or whatever, that actually, although like on the small scale that will create some bad things happen, like people will make some bad things if the technology is democratized, it also, if people are used to using this every day, or like everyone's used to using it and everyone has access to it, that is one of the easiest ways to educate the public on the fact that this stuff exists.
That's so true.
If they can all play with it and all see how it works rather than just be told it by the news.
It's like, yeah, it's that kind of difference between magic and technology that you were talking about. If you say, hey, sometimes videos can be fake, people are like, okay, magic, don't understand it. People don't necessarily believe in magic.
Yeah.
You put it on an iPhone app, it's magic, but
accessible.
You're a wizard.
But you're a wizard. Yeah. You're like, okay, cool. I get this. Cool.
I understand how magic works, but I've got a wand. So.
Expecto Patronum. I don't care how it works. I just care what it's
I just know
good.
How to use it.
It's a very good thing that we have transitioned from analog signals to digital signals, because digital signals can not only be encoded, they can also be encrypted, meaning that you have to have the right key to unlock them. Which means that if it was analog signals, any bad actor as a government, or even like smaller than a government, a corporation or whatever, could just block the signals from a TV mast and then broadcast analog signals pretending to be that TV mast that were like Boris Johnson saying, the lockdown's over now, everyone go out and run around and kiss each other, and then like, or like something much more realistic.
It was very good.
That was a very good.
I think you should put a disclaimer there and make sure that people don't think that Boris Johnson.
Deep fake. Wow.
We changed your voice.
I did a deep fake. Fantastic. Yeah. No. Seriously. Like, if you want to create panic in a country, you could just do that. And like the fact that we have systems that I assume are in some ways resilient to being hacked on a TV is a very important thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly important. I mean, we're lucky more than anything else that we've got some sort of systems in place here that can defend against it slightly. But this is one of those situations, we've spoken about it many times on the podcast before, where legislation needs to catch up now. We need to be prepared.
It's a future-proof.
Yeah, we need
the
to be...
law.
Yeah, the law needs to be prepared for the technology that's coming 10 years down the line. Because if it doesn't, then in 10 years' time, we're going to have a bunch of people getting away with a lot of stuff that they'd be put in jail for a little bit later. So
things like the fact that upskirt pictures were just banned, just like this year or last year.
Yeah.
That's like crazy that you could take a picture of someone's skirt for like years and years. Like, cameras were invented in the 1800s, man. And you took it until 2020 to make that illegal.
I don't think you can secretly take an upskirt.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
But you could in like the 70s or the 80s.
Yeah, you could. I think with cameras being accessible and not noticeable now, that's a much bigger problem. I'm not
more,
that
it's probably more the distribution that you can do it online. You can distribute it so freely online.
Yeah, actually, it's fair enough. I mean, there's a lot of factors that having a smartphone brings into. Mm. I mean,
but even that, having a smartphone, they've been around since 2000. Well, iPhone was around since 2007, BlackBerry since way before that.
Oh,
like,
I'm
embarrassing how slow we legislate some of these things.
I'm not saying
they're just
that
clearly
we,
not okay.
I'm not saying that we like, oh, it's fair that it took so long. I'm saying it's awful long.
I know you're not at all.
It's the situation.
Curry defends upskirting in this week's episode of Sci Guys.
I just think the situation had to, you have to look at how bad the situation had to get for them to actually do anything. So just briefly, how.
Or they just aren't bothering with women's issues in legislation sometimes.
What? No.
I think that might... It's more that it's a women's issue.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, very sad.
So
rubbish.
Quickly...
We're such simps, aren't we? Look at us all. Such simps.
Simping. I mean, so that is pretty much everything on deepfakes. We've gone through like the history of photo and video manipulation right through to where we are now with...
And even some of the future.
Yeah, some of the future. Videos being changed on the fly in real time. Oh. Goodness me.
We could be anybody on the Sci Guys.
We could
future.
Be. Imagine one day you're able to video call someone and look and sound exactly like someone else in real time.
You could catfish on FaceTime convincingly.
The only way to know for sure that you're not being catfished would be to literally meet the person in person. There'd be
you,
no
you
other
don't want to do that if it's a catfish.
No, exactly. It's incredible the world that we're moving into.
No.
But that is
I want
it.
To give a quick correction.
Yes.
As it is it. When I said earlier that deepfakes were a convolutional neural network, I was wrong. They are a generative adversarial network.
Again. I actually have that written down.
Ah.
But I didn't.
There you go.
I didn't spot that.
if you want to see an example of a generative adversarial network, go to thispersondoesnotexist.com.
No, no.
No, I hate that site. That's so
that
creepy.
That site is horrifying. I don't like it.
You'll see a picture, and that person is not real.
Quick explanation. It generates a photo of somebody that looks very real, but they don't exist.
This actually, this is something I want to bring up in... So if you guys wait till the end of this week, I'm actually going to bring something like this up in SciGuys Live. I found something recently that I thought was really interesting that's kind of related to this. So get ready for that. But that is the end of the show. Thank you all for listening. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Monday. And why not leave us a nice wee review? You can also support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys or find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Or send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. I'm Not Corey Everywhere.
I'm Jemkin Everywhere.
I'm Luke Cupforth Everywhere. Goodbye.
Goodbye.